Good morning, Australia, and a good afternoon, America, and welcome to everyone listening across the world. This is Radio Tony with Art You Deserve and the glorious Tracy Eaton. Now, just a reminder, Payo is listening live online for your comments and to answer any of your questions and provide you with the links you need about anything we talk about in the show today. Remember that you can catch up on all the replays of these shows on Binge TV across the US and now Hero Go TV across the US, and the Tony TV app with all the shows is on LG, Roku and Samsung smart TVs across the world. So we have been talking to the lovely Tracy Eaton last week and this week, and I just want to tell you a little bit about Tracy, who is an international artist and creates passion art, and all who see it fall in love with it. Tracy was born in New Zealand and made Australia her home since 2006. And she has since become one of Australia's most coveted artists, full stop. She's in demand across Australia and around the globe for her exclusive commissioned artworks and has been creating those commissioned artworks for the Academy Awards for the last 3 years, making Tracy an inspirational artist. Now, she's qualified in occupational therapy and colour psychology, which brings depth and understanding to her artwork. And today, Tracy and I are going to talk about some of the concepts you'll hear us mentioning throughout the show, the series of shows, and that is around contemporary versus modern art. This series of shows is really about the life of an artist and how their passion for painting and art transforms into life. Tracy's been described as a modern and contemporary artist, so I wanted to explore these labels first up this week. Tracy, what is modern art in the true sense of the word? And good morning, and how are you?
Good morning. I am fabulous, apart from cold, as we were just saying before, but very happy to be here today. So thanks for having me. Now, modern art, I find it a very interesting term because actually modern art isn't modern at all. The term relates right back to like the 1800s, which is crazy, right? Because 1800s isn't modern. And my first realization of that, because I'm self-taught, I didn't go to university, was when I went to the Museum of Modern Art in New York. So I was all excited going, oh, I'm going to see all this like really latest stuff. When I was seeing Van Gogh and Salvador Dali and all these beautiful work. But the reason they called it modern art is it really was actually the beginning of artists really quickly and strongly walking away from what was historically traditional art, which is realism, painting something exactly how it looks. So modern art became more expressionist, it became more interpretive. They were using colour, they were using form, they were exploring symbolism and the idea of something as opposed to what it was. And that's really what formed modern art way back when. And it also really relates actually to people who are no longer here. So that's interesting in itself. Whereas
I don't know if you want to be labelled a modern.
Because I've thought, you're right, hello, I'm not dead, I'm here, I'm fully here, woohoo, thank God. So hence my contemporary artwork, in the true sense of the traditional sense of the word or the artistic industry sense of the word, I am a contemporary artist because I'm current, I'm here, I'm alive, I'm still painting, and I paint based on what's happening now, what I'm feeling, what I'm experiencing, and what the world's seeing. So that's what contemporary art is. However, I like to feel different, and I'm not a traditionalist in any way. I call myself a modern artist because when I first went into full-time business, the majority of my clients are just an everyday person who are not necessarily art collectors, who don't truly, you know, who don't really understand all the ins and outs of the art world, which incidentally you don't have to. So for me, I felt the word modern indicated to people who don't necessarily have a historical artistic background that I paint in a more expressive way. It's not realism. So that's why I chose to call myself a modern artist. So interesting, I'm kind of running these two worlds where in the traditional art sense I'm a contemporary artist, and that's why I'm listed in, like, I was listed in a book for the leading contemporary artists of 2021 yes. around the world, which was so amazing. So yeah. in that area, I'm contemporary, but in my mind and in my clients' world, because as I said, most of them are just people who want something for their home, so, a beautiful piece for their home. I'm modern.
Yes. So they're buying something that is a piece of beauty and it's unique and exclusive versus from the traditional.
That's right.
Art.
It's current today. So in their world, yeah. that's, I believe that's modern. So that's why I chose, because I'm more committed as a person and a brand, I suppose, to working with people who just want to have something beautiful. And I don't care where they come from. I don't care what their knowledge is or all I care about is they want something fabulous. And so to me, that means we can be modern and funky, hence why I chose the word modern art.
Yeah.
Even though traditionally and officially it's not quite right. Crazy.
So from the traditional world, you're labelled contemporary. But if you look at some of your beautiful artworks, though, they lend themselves to that modernist era from the bygone anyway. But
so
in terms
much.
Of what, yes.
I think if you think about modern art, as a broad definition, which is that symbolism and all about subjective experience, then absolutely that's how I paint, no question. So I kind of broadly fit that term. But when you think about the fact that modern art era really depicts people, as I said before, that are no longer with us and sort of finished around the 1950s or 40s, 50s, I so obviously don't fit that part of the mold. Yeah.
Thank God obviously. For that. I'm so glad that you're still painting.
Me too.
So, Tracy, your art does feature portraits and landscapes, but it's also peppered with beautiful and stunning abstract art. So let's talk about abstract art for a moment. How would you describe it in Tracy Eaton terms?
Abstract art to me is really about a art form or a way of painting that is using, instead of what, once again, traditional ideas like a landscape or something that looks like something, abstract art is really about using color, form, shapes, just context that is completely random. So instead of having something that looks like a tree and the tree talking to you, what's talking to you is the colour or the concept or the idea. And what I think it allows people to do when they view the artwork is really embrace their own experience and their own imagination and bring something that's personal to that painting. Whereas if you were painting in a realistic form, which is technically beautiful and very traditional, you know it's a tree. And you may resonate to a degree with that tree, but if you have an abstract form of that tree, you're like, oh my God, I love that color. Check out that line. Like, that reminds me of this. Or to you, it might not even look like a tree. It might end up being the surrounding of a bird. And to me, that doesn't matter. So really, abstract art for me really is about the color and the shapes and I'm painting in my head already, the techniques, the texture, the things that you see on the canvas is what's talking to you, as opposed to the actual subject of the painting. That makes sense.
And it can be and it can be quite complex and equally stunningly beautiful. And I understand that it takes quite a while to create those artworks. So can you take us through a bit of a journey on what it looks like and how it feels for you to create that abstract piece?
That's an interesting question, because so many people look at abstract art, mine included, when I do paint total abstract as opposed to more an impressionist style landscape. A lot of people look and go, oh, I could do that. That's so easy. And it's actually not. A really good abstract piece has an immense amount of balance created, and that balance comes from positioning of color and form and shape on the page, what colors you use together, how busy it is or how not busy it is, how many layers are involved. So you really, from my perspective, when I look at a blank canvas and I know I'm doing pure abstract, I have an idea of a concept in mind, but it's, for me, it's yes. really free flowing. So whilst I may, I definitely start with a color palette and I know what I want, what colors I want, because I know a feeling I want it to have. But yeah. how it transitions and how it actually morphs is entirely up to the painting. That's how I paint. So when I'm creating layers, I'll be like, I actually did it with yours. I'll show yours obviously later. But
yes.
With some of the base layers, I'm like, oh, I want this there and this there. And it's not like I'm consciously thinking about that. That just evolves as it happens. So that's why I love any form of abstraction or impressionist stuff, because it just it allows the painting to take its own path. That, which sounds, I know, a little bit airy-fairy, but it's so true.
No.
I don't control, once I get started, I don't control all of the components. I'm not thinking, as I said, there's this stage and this stage. I know that I need layers. I know I want color blocks in this area. I know I want some negative space here, so that's kind of smooth. I know I want texture here, but the real intricacies of that just morph over time.
Yeah. Tracy, you talk about, as an artist, being that in that beautiful flow state where your creativity is the one driving the creation of the art piece. And I know you and I have spoken about that flow state before, but what is it for an artist? Can you describe that state that creates that beauty on the canvas?
So how long have we got? We've got a while. This is a good question.
You can take a long time.
Let me tell you a little bit. I'll come back to the answering that specifically, but I want to tell you a quick story first, because been about probably 4 or 5 years ago. I met a professional racing car driver following one of my exhibitions. We went out to celebrate and Luke was there. And when I first met him, because I had a preconceived idea of what sport is and what art is, and to me they were like poles apart, like there is no similarity between the two. So when I met Luke, I was I don't think we're going to have that much in common. Nice guy, but you know what am I going to talk about with him? I don't know anything about car racing. So we started chatting, and somehow it got around to talking about what we call the genius zone, which everybody has. And his genius zone obviously is racing. My genius zone is painting. So as we started delving further into that, I was talking about how I have what I call a procrastination activity. And actually it's not, it's a way of getting ready to create. And he's like, oh my God, me too. So the more we talked, he was telling me about his process and the little tasks that he does to get his mindset right, to get into that seat and start driving. And he said that his mind needs to be is completely clear. It's devoid of controlled conscious
thinking.
And here is a guy who's about to travel at 300 kilometers an hour, and you're like, of course you're consciously thinking. He's not. When he gets into that space, he completely trusts. This is what I said last week. He completely trusts himself, and he can trust the process because he knows it, he owns it, he believes it, and it's just a part of his being. So as we carried on talking, we both just stopped and went, oh my freaking God, we are completely different in what we do, yet the similarity we have is that creative process, or that genius zone, or that genius process, whatever you want to call it. And it floored us both, I think, because it was like, wow, we are polar opposites at our craft, yet we both have a need to be in that space. So for me, and I would say that for every artist, it would be different. I'm sure it's different. I mean, you, any artist, a writer, a musician, you're a creative person. A business owner that's highly successful is a creative person, and we'll all have our own little zone. So obviously I can't comment on other people's, but for me, it is fully addictive, first point. Because it feels so
in a good way.
Feels like I'm not working.
In a good way.
Oh, in a great way.
Yeah.
I could do it all the time because you feel like you're not working. So you have, I feel
yes.
it just comes so naturally to me. And I can be busy, busy, busy in my head beforehand. And when I know when I hit my flow, my husband laughs all the time because he'll when I'm fully in my zone, he'll walk in and he'll watch me and he's like, you are all over the canvas. Like, I don't just focus here, I'm there. I just feel exactly what needs to happen. And it's not even, as I said before, there's no conscious thinking about I must put my hand and paint on the bottom right. I'm just doing. And I paint fast, very fast,
yes.
and I'm totally in flow. Getting into flow is sometimes the challenge. So I said before that I have little procrastination activities. I like to work all by myself. I don't like anyone else in my space. If my energy in my house or my studio is bad, I find it very hard to switch off. I need to have this level of just calmness and joy around me.
If you walk into your studio and the energy feels a little uneven, are there any things that you do that try and make it right?
Very much. That's part of my little activities before I paint. So I'll often burn incense, or all my other senses come into play. I'll burn like a oil burner, so I've got some nice fragrance happening. I'll turn some music on, and it tends to be music that I've listened to for like years and years. It doesn't tend to be when I first start. I don't know. I'll reposition the light. I seriously would do some crazy things. I'll play around with the paints that's on my little table beforehand just to make sure I've got everything. I'll kind of unwrap the paint on the palette from the day before, and sometimes I'll just kind of look at it and go, yeah, okay. And I just many times I've stuck my finger in to make sure it's the right texture. It's just crazy little things that allows me to then own the space. So then my energy fills that space up, and then we're good to go.
And once,
I'm really in that space, I can I like to stay in it. So I'm not an artist who paints for an hour. I'm an artist who paints for 8 or 10 hours at a time. I love that.
Okay.
That is my ultimate. So I know, like this morning I was up at 4 or 4:30 and I thought, oh well, I've got this at 8 o'clock. By the time I've had breakfast, I'll cleaned up, I'll have about an hour and a half. No, it's not worth starting. Because to me, I want to be in it. I'm all or nothing. Remember I said that last week, I'm all or nothing. So I want to be in it all day. So it does get frustrating. I get quite agitated if I get interrupted.
Yeah.
Because then I fall back into it quickly, but I have to go back. I don't want to be back. I want to be in. Yeah.
So Tracy, do you try and schedule time so that you have that big length of time in which you can just stay in that zone and paint? And does time tend to stop during that time so that you're painting and painting and painting and painting and then suddenly realize it's dark?
Yes to both. So the busier I became, the more I realized in running a business, obviously I have my business brain and my creative zone. So I schedule my calendar so that Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I paint. Tuesday and Thursday are my admin days. And when I'm really busy or the mood takes me, I'll paint on one of the days of the weekend. I'll always aim to have at least one day off. That's important because that's the other part of, for me, being in flow is I need to give myself the space to be invigorated and re-energized and re-inspired to get into that flow quickly. So I am quite structured with my time. And yes, when I'm really happily painting away, I kind of forget to even stop for lunch, or I just cruise. I'm painting. Might have a Bailey's and vodka because that's my painting drink. If I'm really stressed about lunchtime, I'll pour that and we're good to go. And then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, I'm done for the day. And it's not even a going getting dark or a time frame. I just feel like
Done. It's just a okay.
Yeah.
So Trace, if you've got commissioned art coming up and it's on a certain deadline, does that cause you? stress from time to time, like, or
not
is
stress.
It just because it's on a deadline?
Not stress. I do like to work to deadlines actually sometimes, because I find I can just take forever sometimes to do things. Otherwise, I do procrastinate.
Yeah.
But working to a deadline, the challenge with that sometimes, particularly if you've been doing one after the other, is that you might not feel that creative that day. You might not feel as inspired. You might be tired. You really don't feel like you want to get in front of a canvas. You just want to have that regrouping time, but you need to do it. So you have to, I have to find a way to force through that and almost force my creative zone to happen. And sometimes that can be challenging. And I do feel like the best paintings that I do, I believe, are the ones that I'm in total flow and I'm really chilled and I'm really relaxed.
Yes.
And they always sell fast. I paint them fast and they sell fast.
And they
so
sell
I know
fast.
That that's the case. Whereas with some of my commissions, I feel like I need to just power through. Once I've powered through that, it's not even a block, it's like a little lump, because I'm like, I'm not totally flowing. But once I've pushed through that, then I'm good to go. So it's not really a stress for me. It's just a little hurdle that I need to jump over.
As we're talking about this being in flow state and your genius zone, there's and we talked about this earlier, that there's a certain the colors have certain influence on your energy as well, which leads us into that conversation about the psychology of color. And I know that you've studied this quite extensively, so let's talk a little bit about that and how it influences the way that you work. If you're doing abstract art and you have that kind of idea in your mind of what it's going to look like, do the colors come with that idea as well?
Yes, they do. I always start with the colors. I always have a feel like it doesn't even have to be abstract art. The one I'm painting for you is not abstract. It's more of an expressionist or impression kind of landscape, as you know. But I already knew what color palette I was going to be using. So the color is essential for me. And I'm obsessed with color. I didn't realize how much until I painted more and more and more. So much so, in fact, let me take a step back. Doing occupational therapy, where I did art therapy and then studying color psychology, I also ran a digital marketing company. So I, from a business standpoint, I was working with brands to use color. So a huge part of my life and career has been about working with color. And it wasn't until I was painting full time that I was like, this is just an instinctive thing for me. This is essential to what I do. So yes, color, it's also an interesting one, because as an artist, obviously every single thing that we do, I always say that every painting is a piece of our soul that we're gifting to people every time that we paint. And it's so true. So if we're painting in a color that for whatever reason is not resonating with us, that can be quite interesting. We might be in a bad mood that day. We might be whatever, and I'm painting in red. That's kind of not going to work well for me. So that's cool. I'll tell you a story about this, because I could talk for hours about color psychology, because it's also just like modern art. It's also not a new strategy. It's been around since Isaac Newton was the one who discovered the relationship of it with color. And color scientifically is a vibration, right? Which means that everyone can sense it, and we subconsciously sense it. And we are surrounded by it. So when people don't have color, they often feel quite flat and quite depressed, because they don't have that color. And I don't remember if I said this last week or not. Did I tell you guys a story about the children who've been blind from birth?
I don't think so. I think we've talked about it, but I don't think we've told the audience about it.
Because I became obsessed at this point. This is when I was doing my occupational therapy training. So I was 20, 20, 21?
Yeah.
20. And I don't recall where it was done. And I'm sorry, I don't recall the people who did it. So that's bad of me. But all I could remember was the result. typical artist, right? Oh, this is the nice bit. I remember that. but there was, so there was, they did an exercise with children aged between 6 and 8 who had been blind from birth. So therefore they had no conscious or cognitive understanding of what colour looks like. So what they did is they put all the kids in different rooms and they had silk scarves, so the same fabric, but the silk scarves were dyed different colours. So there's blue one, red one, green one, yellow, etc. They draped these scarves over the kids so they could feel it on their skin, they could touch their skin.
Yes.
And every single kid described blue, the blue scarf in the same way, a red scarf in the same way, the green scarf in the same way. So, you know, blue was cold or some, you know, people felt that it was, like, it was really calm in kid language, but calm and relaxed. Red was like fire and they felt energized. And the more I heard, the more I was like, oh my God, how is this possible? This is just blowing my head.
Yeah.
It got me excited about how color can unlock communication, it can unlock emotions, it can really help us transition from one stage to another. So that's why I started using it within my own practice in occupational therapy. So for me, not only do I paint because I want to bring some beauty and joy to the world, I feel like this is my way of helping people transition through a change period in a really gentle way. And I know it works personally because I was years ago doing a commission for, gets me excited this bit, but for a commission for a charity. And the charity was for domestic violence survivors. So I wanted to create, it was a painting that was going for auction. And I wanted to create a piece that really reflected how they may be feeling or women and all of the emotions that they've gone through. So
that
all of that. So I strategically chose magenta, pink, silver, white, and a little bit of blue, green, and as well aqua. Now, at the time, my whole life, I've hated pink. I've never been someone who likes
pink. I know.
It's like, oh, it's like the worst colour ever. I didn't like it at all. So at the time when I was thinking about this, I wasn't even consciously thinking that I didn't like pink, but this is the colour that the painting had to be. So here I am as the artist painting a colour that I detest. Think about that for a second. And I was painting this piece. And over the course of about 3 days, I started to get really, really agitated and emotional. I was like this. I started crying. I was upset. I was like, I can't do this. I was throwing my brushes down. And I said to Wayne, my husband was like, what is going on with me? So I went to the studio the next day, started again. And I was like, I can't do this. So I threw my brushes down, took the canvas off, put another canvas onto a table so I could pour some paint. I'm like, I'm just going to start another one. And I once again wasn't consciously thinking about what I was doing. I poured all this yellow and green and all, like, just totally contrasting colors, finished that and went, oh, thank God. And it was like I took this step back and I could calm down. Mm-hmm. And the moment I did that, I realized pink is all about, and magenta specifically, is all about universal love and self-love and caring for others. But most importantly, it's about being self, you know, loving who you are, I guess, and that and knowing what your gifts and what you can give to people. That's why I didn't like pink. We've all had our challenges, and there's a long period of my life where I did not value myself enough. And pink was firing up all of those negative self comments that were going on in my head and all of those emotions. And the moment I stepped back from that yellow and I just hit me, you know, I was like, oh my God, you idiot, you so know this. I studied this. This is exactly what's going on. But because I was immersed in it, I didn't see it. Anyway, when, as soon as I realized that, I could take a step back. I took a couple of days and went, I've got this. I bought some stuff up for me that I thought I'd dealt with. So I had dealt with
And you
that.
Dealt, yes.
I went back to my studio, finished the painting within a day and a half, and spent like the next literally 3 or 4 months wearing pink nail polish. I bought pink tops. I was like, oh my God, I've got pink everywhere. And then I've created a lot like it. So the point being is that we don't even sometimes know what color is going to bring up for us, but it will do it. It categorically, I've seen too many examples and felt too many of my own examples to not understand that color brings up emotion. It's amazing.
And so, Tracy, when you were marketing, I'm guessing that the same thing happened with branding colors and palettes for businesses.
Think about McDonald's. It's the perfect brand, right? Yeah. It's a fast food joint.
Yeah.
Red is about fast action and impulse buying, first point. Yeah. Yellow activates your mind and increases hunger. Hello. oh my God. Whoever created that brand, I'm like, oh, you're amazing. They knew it. And then it's perfect for their brand. Absolutely perfect. Yeah.
So you've got KFC is red. Red Rooster is red. I've never thought about it like that.
You go to the mall and any retail store will have red. Sale, impulse buying. Oh, my God. Let's act now. Let's do this. It's bold. It's fast. It's very action-based. Yeah.
You never think of colour from that psychological perspective. And thinking about it now, I'm like, oh, okay, righto. And so some of the, I know when I was reading about and prepping for the interview today, and I was reading about some of the colors and what they, and so they seem to be grouped into cool, warm, and neutral colors. And I know when you do a commissioned work, you actually tap into the personal, or even if it's a business or a building, and that transfers through into the painting. So what do cool colors represent in terms of the psychology of color, Tracy?
I wouldn't necessarily just say cool colors because it does vary. I wrote a book about this, by the way, because I wanted people to understand how to use this in their home and in their life.
Yeah.
But every color has a positive and a negative polarity, just like life. There's always good bits and not so good bits. I'm a bit of an optimist, so I always focus on the good bits. So let's look at blue. Mm-hmm. So blue, oh my God, you've got light blue, dark blue, all sorts of things. And we can talk about that because every time you add, so when we talk about the psychology of color, we're looking at the primary color without any white or black or gray added to it to change the shade or the tone, right? So it's that base color. Yeah. Blue is about trust, communication, honesty, leadership. It's calming. Yeah. It's actually, people say it's masculine. It's absolutely not. It is a very feminine energy. It's the polar opposite to what people often think. And you can feel that because when you look at the sky, you look at the ocean, you feel this level of nurturing and calm. And that's what blue is all about. Yeah. Well, in part.
Yeah.
Green.
Yeah, but then it can be, you can change it by adding the white or the black, which changes it again, doesn't it?
And it changes the energy of the color. Blue is a lot more, it does, because white is all about purity, clarity, and anything is possible. So if you put too much white around, it actually whitewashes potentially what you're feeling. But white, when you add it to a color, so when you think about blue being trusted and nurturing and leadership, a light blue is all about communication and speaking your truth, because obviously white's about clarity and purity and openness. So if you've got openness and communication and trust together, it's about absolutely speaking your truth. So, and there's examples of people who do public speaking when they're feeling anxious or they'll wear blue, light blue rings, or they'll wear light blue clothing, and it will help to actually just allow them to open up and speak. So you can use it in so many ways in life. It's just the more, it's a little rabbit warren. You can delve into it and speak about it for hours because you can use it in every facet of your life. It's like, you know, women are good at it, right? We'll go to the, get up in the morning, we've got to have a cup of coffee, we walk into the wardrobe, like, what am I going to wear today? Oh, no, I don't want to wear black. I feel like wearing this today. And we don't even think about why we might feel like wearing that. And it could be the style, of course, but I can guarantee you it will also be for some reason that color is resonating with you that day. It's making you feel good that day. You might need it. Okay. You might be feeling a bit low, so you don't really want to wear blue. You want to wear something that's going to pep you up a bit more. You might feel like
red.
You might feel like you need some confidence, so you'll wear black, because black is protection. It's strong, it's powerful, and it's a confident color. So is red. Oh. Red is a confident color.
Yeah.
So when I was in corporate was not my thing, as I said last week, and I didn't realize that progressively over years my entire wardrobe was black. I lived in black. And I was overbalanced with it. So there wasn't a balance, but there was black everywhere because I needed a mask. I mean, it's like protection. A warrior sticking on there, whatever. Or I needed that, and that's what black gave me.
Yeah.
Whereas if I
was Tracy, in surrounding yourself with that black, so this was before that you're painting predominantly all the time, do you think you were trying to like stop that creativity and color coming out? Is that part of what the black was around?
Actually,
or was it more about
I hadn't thought about that, but I feel like I do feel like it was more about giving me the strength and protection to continue and the confidence to continue.
Do what?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I hadn't thought black would suppress things. So, potentially.
Because inside of you was this mastermind, creative artist.
Yes.
On beauty and color and mix and gorgeousness, and it hadn't yet come out, but possibly deep within your soul, it knew that that was there. So your soul knew that.
Screaming at me to embrace it. Yeah.
Let loose.
Go nuts.
I still think of the courage that it actually took you to go from what you were doing into the artist space, because we talked about this, there is a misconception that artists are undervalued and it's a, you know, you're going to be poor for the rest of your life. Those sorts of things tend to come into our mind when we think of artists, but that's not what it has to be. So you've created this amazing business and life from following and allowing that creative passion to be transferred into the artworks you produce.
That's true. And as actually the discussion we had yesterday, there are moments where I have to remind myself that the best service I can be is to actually just stop trying to control and drive all the time. That's a very masculine trait. But apart from that, it's very business trait, and it's not going to serve me to get where I want to go. I think you're right what you said. I think art in some cultures is devalued. I don't think it's not.
And it should never be.
It should never be. Even at high school, going through school, we're told that art isn't a real career. So, and I don't know. I don't have children, so I don't know if that's changed now. But I feel like, you know, if people would get, parents were given a choice for their child to be a singer, an artist, a poet, or a rugby player, or a netball player, they would be more leaning toward, in our culture, anyway, definitely leaning towards sports.
Yeah.
And that's something that I would love to change. And my way, I guess, of changing that
absolutely.
Is to continue to just create something that is beautiful. Because I was talking to someone the other day, actually. It was you as well. And I said, you know, people just want beautiful. They want, people value beauty.
Definitely.
And I'm not talking about being traditionally fabulously gorgeous. It's not about that, but it's about when the sun's streaming on trees and it lights up the leaves and you can see it's shimmering, that makes
and
people
it's
feel
beautiful.
Good. Yeah, and it's a beautiful coloured sunset. People go, oh my God, that's so lovely. So people love beauty. They want to be surrounded by beauty, and that's what colour and art does. So I think it's a shame that that's
absolutely.
Not held up in higher regard in lots of cultures.
Yeah. And I think too, from so your artwork is not only beautiful, but a lot of the stuff that you do is quite big in terms of size. Oh, no. And the Lovely. Capacity, I can't quite. That capacity for the colour and energy and size of an artwork to change the space. And the image comes to mind of someone sitting in front of a beautiful big artwork in a quiet museum, just a single person sitting and just being immersed in that energy and taken away from the, like, that's a powerful gift to humanity. And we need to value that we need artists more than ever, and particularly when the world is in crisis. We need artists to be creating.
We need to definitely come back and connect. Art and creativity helps us reconnect with ourselves and each other and what's important.
Definitely.
But I recently completed a mural for a cafe. It's 11.
Yes, it's great. Yeah,
so it's, thank you. So 5 meters by nice. 8 meters, 8.5 meters. Such a cool size.
Yeah, it's huge.
But it's exactly what you said. It was in a concrete jungle, essentially, which is what cities are. There was just concrete walls everywhere. They were wanting to create this really lovely outdoor oasis seating space. So we created this mural that had all these beautiful trees with flowers coming over, and you could see in the distance, and it felt like
beautiful.
You were transported. That's
into a meadow.
Yeah.
Makes me think of a meadow.
Yes, exactly. And it's just expansive and open. And when you're in a city, you don't necessarily feel and see that. So it's a beautiful way of transporting us into a space where we can just calm down, relax, take a moment and reconnect. Yes. And that is an amazing thing to be able to give someone.
And it's Yeah, because you like the big landscapes and big murals that you can get lost in that, can't you?
Yes, it's so cool. I mean, I'm too free flowing. Look at me, the way I talk. I'm like, you know, I'm too expensive but expressive. Yes. So for me, painting on a canvas that's like this. Which I had to do
is constricting.
The first year when I did them for the Oscars, it was only 30 by 30. It was tiny. And I'm like, I feel like I was like this, and I just wanted to chuck it or big brush strokes, and I'm having to do this. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so not me. Whereas like the easel behind me, it looks quite small, but it's just, it's 2 meters in length.
It is big. It is.
Which is big massive. Enough. And I stand in front of it and I can't even, you know, I can't reach the edges.
Yeah.
So. And it holds, I can paint a nearly 3 meter canvas onto it, so it's good.
On that. Yeah. Tracy, just going back to the Oscars for a moment, when you did, I think it might have been the 20 this year, where you did the bigger paintings and beautiful. Then the gift was a small portion of the overall art. Yeah. So the original was quite expansive, but the actual gift to the actor was smaller, which I thought was a wonderful way for them to have a portion of that beautiful big painting, whatever it was. Of course, you know, my favorite is the Ellen DeGeneres
one. Gave me a chance to make sure that what they got was unique. And the buyer of the original had a unique piece as well. So it kind of, I got the idea when I did a hotel here on the Gold Coast, whereas they wanted this big original for each floor, and then they wanted prints down the corridors, and each floor had to be different.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, how can we do that in a really unique, funky way? So that's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
I chose zoomed up sections of the paintings, and then I produced that onto a canvas and then hand embellished it, and it was great. All of a sudden I've now got like 5, 6, 7 paintings from one painting, and they're all different and they all still look funky.
So creative. Now, before we want to run out, we ran out of time last week, and I wanted to head back to one of the great fun things that we're doing with Tracy on the show. And so part of that, the show that we're doing, is a commissioned work for me and my home. And Tracy's been taking me through this amazing commissioning process, which I don't know. It feels really, it's a lovely process. So it starts with a conversation, and then it goes into the space where the artwork's going to go, and then into the colors and the psychology. And it's just, for me, it's like a big warm hug of an experience.
Oh, thank you.
But what it's really lovely, people. So if you ever want to have something beautiful, get a commissioned piece that is you and unique and specially made for your home, because the process with Tracy is just, it's beautiful. Anyway, so we've been going through this commissioning process, and at the beginning Tracy said you make all your own canvases. So can you just quickly tell the audience how you do that and why you do that? Because I think the reason why you do it is fantastic.
I didn't like, very simply, didn't like the quality that I could get in a store. That's the first point with the canvases. Yeah. And I was also frustrated that I was restricted by size and shape, because I'm like, I want to paint what I want to paint. Yeah. And I couldn't always get what I wanted. So I thought the only way to make sure that we do get exactly what I want is to make it in-house. So we create a couple of different types of canvases. One which is just stretched over a wood frame, which is called a stretch canvas or gallery mount, which is what yours is, which I'll show you in a second, because I've purposely kept it out of the frame so you couldn't see. So we do that as a standard. And if we're going to be doing a lot of heavy texture or pouring work, then we put an aluminium panel between, like I said last week. So that ensures, and Wayne, who makes them, is so particular that it's not even half a millimeter out. America, I'm sorry, I don't know what the millimeter and inch conversion thingy is, but anyway, it's like
inches and
there is no room, there is no error. I can promise you that every single canvas, because I know Wayne so well, and how he works, it is perfectly square and it stays that way. So the canvas we use is quite heavy duty because of that. I triple prime it, which means it comes double prime, and then I always prime it again. So in the last week since we spoke, we've been through that process. We've created your canvas, we've primed it to make sure, and priming is important because we use it comes with a titanium dioxide color covering, and it guarantees the canvas from wear and tear. Like, it's a lot harder to and because it's cotton, so it will deteriorate over time. Those primings minimizes that, and also being so white, it also is a great platform for the colors to burst off the canvas. So we do that, and that so a really important process. And because we make them ourselves, I can have whatever shape and size I want. So I can walk into your home, or like we said over Zoom, I can look at your wall and go, oh my God, I reckon we can do this by this, let's do
this,
it. And I don't
and
even
this.
Have to question it. So there's nothing standard about what we do, which I like. That's good. And it means
that,
as I said,
that was the other thing. And that was the other thing, Tracy. We were in lockdown, so Tracy was going to come and visit my house and see the space, but we were in a lockdown at that time, so we couldn't do that. So I walked around with my Zoom, and then afterwards, Tracy said, "You need to measure this, 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 and this," which I did, and sent it off to her. So it's all been done virtually. So that means that Tracy can do artwork across the planet via Zoom and ship it to you. It's just,
absolutely,
it's amazing. Yeah.
And if we're ever not in lockdown again. Do you want to see? I know we're running out of time. Do you want to see?
I know. I'm just, before we run out of time, let's have a look. I can't wait to see.
Beyond
myself.
I'll bring it up closely as well. This is from a distance.
My goodness.
The first two layers of it. Can you see?
Oh, that's Beautiful. And so this artwork that Tracy's creating is exactly because Tracy, that's beautiful. I love it already, and it's not even close to being finished.
Oh gosh, no, that's beautiful. Like second layer, sorry. There you go.
Yeah.
So we've got drips.
And so Tracy, I know. Tell me what's in there.
We have, giving away all my secrets, we have copper leaf and silver leaf, which we've used for this stuff.
Yes.
Here we have hot glue that I've used.
Oh.
We have sand. Oh. Real sand. So you've got a bit of Gold Coast Beach on that painting right there.
Awesome.
We've got sand. And
I love texture.
Yeah, that's just to create the base texture. Then what I've done is I've used, I think I said last week, I don't use water to thin out my acrylic paints because it breaks it apart. So I've created glazes basically that I have then popped over, and I've there'll be some time lapses I'll post by the end of the day on my website under your name, Tony. So guys, if you want to have a look, just go to Tony Lontis under art projects and you'll see the transition and the progress.
On TracyEaton.com. TracyEaton.com.
I've taken photos of time lapsing, so you'll see that. Yeah. But we take paint off, we lay it on, take paint off. There's all sorts of techniques that I've used to get this effect.
Fantastic. I'm so excited that we can do this and show your creative process, because I think that people need to understand how much time and effort goes into creating these unique masterpieces. Now, before we run out of time, quickly remind that on Tracy's website, you can see lots and lots of her artwork around the Academy Awards and the projects that she's done producing the stuff for the Academy Awards. You can also see a number of her unique commissioned art pieces, and you'll also see some of her beautiful paintings that are for sale. Now, just a reminder that Tracy's artwork is exclusively unique. There's no other, you're not going to see a carbon copy of her stuff anywhere else, unless it's one of the prints that are limited edition and created via a different process. So the big, beautiful artwork you see is unique and available only from Tracy Eaton. And then you'll also see the places where the big hotels, motels, public spaces have commissioned work by Tracy. And anyone who's in real estate or development, if you're listening today to the show, Tracy does amazing work in that space as well for developers and real estate who want to have something really special in their spaces. Tracy,
another commission for just quickly.
Oh, yay!
Where we're doing a 12-meter wall, 12 by 4 meters, a huge wall, and which I'm really excited about. We're painting an original painting that we are then reproducing onto a commercial grade wallpaper to wallpaper their entire reception area, which will look insane. It would be so fun. So, yeah,
absolutely.
It's endless what we can do, endless.
I was just going to say, if you go onto Tracy's website, there's a bedroom there with the most spectacular wallpaper. So that's the other unique thing for designers and people that work in the styling space. Tracy can create something completely unique and put it into wallpaper, and you can put it on the wall. So lots of scope and creativity around what Tracy does. Tracy, thank you so much for being with us again this week. I can't wait till next week. Listeners, we're going to do a little bit of a show swap, and next week we'll be on at 12 midday. Same show, same people, but a little bit later in the day, so that we can show you the progress of what happens with my commissioned piece, and we'll also be delving a bit more into Tracy's life as an international contemporary modern artist. I keep going to call you modern, and now I've got that definition in my head about what modern artists are, and you're not dead.
I'm so much alive.
And Tracy, I love the start of the painting. I want to crawl into it. It's beautiful. Thank you so much. That, my friends, is our lot for this week.
I have to say before you finish very quickly, it took a lot of willpower for me yesterday to stop painting it. I was totally wanting to carry on. Because I'm so not used to having to, showing these stages, which is a good thing. And I was finished it.
Which is a special...
Yeah, so I waited for it to dry because obviously each layer, this has to be fully dry before I paint it over top of it. So by yesterday afternoon, I was like, okay, I can do this. It's like, no, I can't do it. So it's interesting. So thank you for the challenge.
It's fantastic fun. Tracy Eaton, thank you so much for being on the show today. And we will be back next week.
See you, everyone.
That's our lot for today. Bye.
Bye.